I just need to ask Kelsey before we start. I'm going to use the app for the timer. Is that okay? And you've got 30 minutes. Will that work, or do you want a prompt instead?
Nope, that's good.
All right, thank you. So, welcome to the Sunday night. There is a solution. Newcomer and returning members meeting of Overeaters Anonymous. Visit our website at oaontario.org, where you'll find this audio recording, additional podcasts, and a place to donate to keep the special service active. The opinions expressed are those of individual OA members and do not represent OA as a whole. Please help me welcome Kelsey R., who is a compulsive overeater. And Kelsey, if you can tell us where you're located.
I live in, McKinney, Texas.
That's great. And a member who has at least 6 months of abstinence has recovered through the directions in the Big Book and maintains recovery on a daily basis. After the share, there'll be time to make a comment or ask a question about the OA program or what the speaker has shared. Welcome, Kelsey.
Thank you. All right, I'm just gonna invite my higher power, who I call God in. I'm gonna say the third step prayer. God, we offer ourselves to thee to build with us and to do with us as thou wilt. Relieve us of the bondage of self, that we may better do thy will. Take away our difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those we would help. Of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life, may we do thy will always. Amen. All right. So I am Kelsey, recovered compulsive overeater, living really grateful today. Thank you to Jessica for asking me to speak. And we are the lucky ones. We know that there is a solution. So how I use the Big Book to recover, before I knew about the Big Book, I guess the method of recovery in the Big Book, I spent probably 15 years thinking that I was working a program, but not really understanding what the Big Book was actually requiring. I love the OA literature. It's wonderful. It helps me really resonate with, the specific craving and allergy and mental obsession with food specifically. But there is magic in the Big Book that, made sense to me and resonated in a way that I absolutely needed to recover and stay recovered. So on page, in the doctor's opinion, I want to start there with you guys, on XXVIII, that first paragraph says we. So this is in the doctor's opinion. So these are the physicians at the time in 1930, 1940s that are saying we believe, and so suggested a few years ago, that the action of alcohol, so for us, our alcoholic foods, ingredients, and behaviors on these chronic compulsive overeaters is a manifestation of an allergy, that the phenomenon of craving is limited to this class and never occurs in the average temperate drinker. These allergic types can never safely use alcohol, or for us, alcoholic foods, ingredients, or behaviors in any form at all. And once having formed the habit and found they cannot break it, once having lost their self-confidence, their reliance upon things human, their problems pile up on them and become astonishingly difficult to solve. And so, this meeting is for new members and returning members. So you have to ask yourself, like, do you see yourself in these words? Like, do you see yourself having problems that are piling up on you that are astonishingly difficult to solve? And it's not just the food. Like, it's, the first step is, I'm powerless over food and my life is unmanageable. But, like, so are you powerless over food? Are your problems related to food and control around the food and consumption and weight and all of those things? Are you powerless over those things? And not only does that make your life unmanageable in that specific area, but really, it's all areas. Like, it's relationships, it's our jobs, it's our like self-esteem. It's all of it. It was for me at least. And nothing good in my life was making me happy. And so I was desperate. Like I was really desperate. And we really have to be desperate. Like this is really the last house on the block. Like we don't come here. I didn't come here happy. And like, can you guys still hear me?
Okay. So I didn't come here like a willing participant of like, oh my gosh, like I get to be part of this club. I was actually angry. Like I was mad that I couldn't figure it out on my own. But I had to accept it. I had to accept it because it took me almost 18 years of not accepting it and being so miserable in my life that I was willing to accept it. So the next paragraph says, frothy emotional appeal seldom suffices. The message which can interest and hold these alcoholic people must have depth and weight. In nearly all cases, their ideals must be grounded in a power greater than themselves if they are to recreate their lives. And this is what I needed. Like I needed my life to be recreated because I was so desperate. I was so desperate and scared and sure that like this was just the best it was going to be. Like this is just how life was. And if you think about it, like, so if we have this physical allergy and we have this mental obsession, like if we compare it to how our bodies crave oxygen, like our bodies, the only reason we don't feel our bodies craving oxygen is because those needs are met, right? We take a breath and we have the oxygen we need. Now, if as a compulsive overeater, like if I take a compulsive bite and then stop abruptly, I will go to extreme measures to get that next bite, whatever it is that looks like. And so we are compulsive overeaters today. If you are today, if you are actively eating compulsively, you got to ask for help. Like you got to ask for help and you have to be willing to do whatever is outlined in this big book if you want to change, because you can change, but you have to be willing. You have to be willing to change. So I want you guys to turn with me on to page 44 and 45. So in We Agnostics. So this so clearly outlines our problem. So ask yourself these questions. And even if you're sitting there and you're recovered, like just because we're recovered doesn't mean like we have a daily reprieve. So if we're just as alcoholic compulsive overeaters as we were before, we're just living in a one day at a time, a recovered state. So it says, if when you honestly want to, you find you cannot quit entirely, or if when drinking, you have little control over the amount you take, you are probably alcoholic. So if when you honestly want to, you can't stop, like in your heart of hearts, like if you say, okay, today is going to be different. Like I'm not going to eat compulsively today. And if you find that you do that and you wake up and you find yourself eating compulsively, whether it's at 10 a.m. or 2 p.m. or 5 p.m. or midnight, whatever it is, like if you honestly want to in your heart, want to stop and can't, or if when drinking, you have little control over the amount you take, you are probably alcoholic. And for us, again, it's not just foods, right? It's ingredients, it's foods, and it's behaviors. So if you find that you've put alcoholic foods down, but you're still not neutral around the food, then it's probably an ingredient that you're not willing or don't know to look at, or it's a behavior. And for me, my behaviors, I was a chronic relapser for a long time. And my last relapse, I started purging. And I didn't know that that was like, I mean, I had tried to make myself throw up in the past, but I wasn't successful, which thanks be to God for that. But in this last relapse, like I was binging and purging, and I was no different than a manic crack addict, like walking on the side of the road, because I was so consumed with like needing to get rid of the food and like not let people know what was going on with me. And that was the story for most of my life of like, I just have to paint this picture that I'm not as sick as I am, because heaven forbid if people know that I'm sick, then if they know like the truth about me, then they will definitely not want me. And so you got to answer yourself. You got to answer for yourself these questions, right? Because it's only when we self-diagnose that the door opens to change. Okay, so further down on page 45, the first full paragraph, it says, lack of power, that was our dilemma. We had to find a power by which we could live, and it had to be a power greater than ourselves. Obviously, but where and how were we to find this power? Well, that's exactly what this book is about. Its main object is to enable you to find a power greater than yourself, which will solve your problem. Okay, so step one, we admit powerlessness. Step two, and our life is unmanageable. So that's the problem. The problem is we're powerless, right? And our life is unmanageable. And then step two comes in, swoops in, and it tells us the solution. Power. We needed power because our problem was lack of power. And for years, I thought that like I had took this one to the bank. Like I grew up religious. I thought like I am a believer. Like there's no way that like I can't have this thing. And I didn't have a belief problem, but I had a reliance problem. And I was scared to death to rely on anyone other than me to take care of me. Because if I didn't take care of myself, then no one would. So we can believe all day, every day, and twice on Sunday, but never rely on a power of our own understanding. I thought I worked this program for almost 2 decades without ever relying on a higher power. And as I did some like, you know, writing and pondering on it, it came down to two things. Like I didn't feel worthy of my higher power's love, and I didn't feel like I belonged. And I've done like these steps, you know, chip away at those like deep seated beliefs and like perspectives, but we all are loved. Like we all belong. Like that was one thing that OA gave me immediately, was just this sense of like, I belong. And whether that came from the group or whether that came from like my higher power through the group, it doesn't really matter, because we are accepted and we are loved. And I hope that everyone here feels that today, because our disease is really good at just telling us that story again and again, that we don't belong and that we aren't worthy or aren't wanted. And that is definitely diseased thinking. And the disease does a good job, because it pushes us into isolation. And that's the exact opposite of what I know my higher power wants for me and what I believe your higher power probably wants for you. Okay. So I worked the program for 18 years, half-heartedly, really. But I also don't think I didn't have the full recipe of what is in this big book at the time. So I am proof that, you know, at some of these, you know, the statement in the big book where it goes, you know, at some of these, we balked, we thought we could find an easier, softer way. And I tried to find an easier, softer way. Like I tried to like, not give up all my alcoholic foods, ingredients, and behaviors. Like I tried to like, you know, be 95% honest with my sponsor. Like I tried to do all of these things, and the result seriously was nil, just like it says. So I want you to, let's see, I want you to turn with me to, page 58, where it says, "Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Those who do not recover are people who cannot or will not completely give themselves to this simple program, usually men and women who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. There are such unfortunates. They are not at fault. They seem to have been born that way. They are naturally incapable of grasping and developing a manner of living which demands rigorous honesty. Their chances are less than average." But it goes on that at the end of that paragraph, it says, many of them do recover if they have the capacity to be honest. So you or I will never have the ability to have long-term recovery if we are not honest. Like that is the brass tacks of it. So look at your life. Like, where are you being dishonest? And that is like the beauty of the inventories, step 10s, step 11s, like it asks you point blank, you know, where have I been dishonest? And dishonesty is just, it just lays fertile soil for us to hide and to not get down to what is blocking us from our higher power. So honesty is a huge piece of our recovery. Okay. So, I'm just looking at my notes here. So we've talked about step one, step two, now step three. Okay. So I was really confused by step three at first. You know, I turned my will and my life over to the care of God, of my understanding. And I didn't know what that meant. And I gave away step three many times in my recovery journey. And what I've come to understand is that on a daily basis, every morning, I put God first by doing my prayer meditation. And I put God first in my life by putting him first in my day. And we're taught here, like, we have a daily reprieve. We're never cured. And so I have to, just like I would never expect my phone to work without charging it, I would never expect my car to drive me to a location if it didn't have gas or if the key was not in the ignition and turned on. I would never expect me to be plugged into that power source if I didn't do things that established the connection to my higher power of my own understanding. And so that's what it looks like today. Like, and it also on a very practical level, like I turn my will and my life over to my higher power by surrendering my alcoholic foods, ingredients, and behaviors every day. Like that is my will, self-will run riot without surrendering to the higher power of my understanding. Like I want to eat what I want to eat. And I want all of it. And I don't want you to tell me what to eat. I don't want you to tell me when to eat. Like that is a real submission of powerlessness and of like this admission that those foods, ingredients, and behaviors keep me from my higher power. Keep me from being present. And that is how I turn it over. So that's step three. And, you know, someone explained it beautifully. They said, you know, when someone picks up and they say, you know, I just took my will back. No, it's actually, we're being resistant to God's will for us. When we took step three, we gave away our will in our life. And so we gave that to God as a gift. And when we don't like life on life's terms, or when things aren't going our way, or if we're in opposition to life as it is, like we are not in agreement with God's will for us, because I've come to understand like God's will is what is in this moment. It's in this moment of what, like, because God gave us free will. Okay. So that's step three. So step four, doing the inventory. And I have to tell you guys, because I am a little bit of a perfectionist, I did the inventory 6 times in like a year and a half. And there is nothing that made me feel more insane than doing my inventory again for the 6th time and expecting different results. But I remember my sponsor saying, just do it anyway, just do it anyway, just do it anyway, and pray for the willingness to believe that this time will be different. And it was, and I didn't give up. And I want you guys to go with me to page 75, where it says, returning home. So this is after you do your inventory. Returning home, we find a place where we can be quiet for an hour, carefully reviewing what we have done. We thank God from the bottom of our heart that we know him better. Taking this book down from our shelf, we turn to the page which contains the 12 steps. Carefully reading the first five proposals, we ask if we have omitted anything, for we are building an arch through which we shall walk a free man at last. Is our work solid so far? Are the stones properly in place? Have we skimped on the cement put into the foundation? Have we tried to make mortar without sand? If we can answer to our satisfaction, we then look at step six. And for me, being able to sit quietly for an hour and just reflect on like the first honest self investment and self-care and self-love that I did. It was, at first it was a little uncomfortable, because again, it comes down to like, I don't believe that I deserve goodness. Like that's what my alcoholism tells me. And luckily I was able to like navigate through that with my higher power, because once I did, an overwhelming peace filled my soul of like, well done, like, well done. You have been thorough. You have been honest. You have been open. And I remember my sponsor asking me to tell her my deepest, darkest secret that I've never told anyone. And you know what she said to me? She said, oh, I've done that too. And I was like, what? What? No, like this program, you guys, it opens our hearts. Like, it's almost like my heart was like in this like lockbox of like, don't touch me, don't hurt me, because like I can't protect myself if I'm vulnerable. And this program like shatters that glass wall. It shatters it, so that we can build relationships that we crave. Like we really do crave. It's like for so long, I was like, I don't need any relationships. I just need my food. Like I just need like my food and the control. And like, if I just exercise enough, if I just like, if I purge enough, I'll get rid of the, like just insanity, like crazy, crazy dialogue of alcoholism. Right. And so step five was really beautiful for me to be able to be seen and received and heard and still loved. And then steps six and seven. And step six and seven, you guys, are like the linchpin. It's the linchpin of all of this. My long-term recovery, because it's my defects that block me, block my access to a power greater than myself. And that is what enables me to survive. And I love the step seven prayer. I just want to read it. It says, when ready, we say something like this: my creator, I am now willing that you should have all of me, good and bad. I pray that you now remove from me every single defect of character which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. Grant me strength as I go out from here to do your bidding. Amen. And I love that I get to read this in the long version of the 10th step all the time, because we get to offer all of ourselves to the higher power of our own understanding, the good and the bad, and take away every single defect of character. Like it's our defects. Like it's my defects. Really, it's my defaults that keep me from God. And so I now like, I never knew like what the skills were to like navigate through like really big emotions. I have twin boys that are 3 years old and they are just like hitting me hard with their like meltdowns and the emotions and like all of these things. And I see so much of myself in them and their 3-year-old bodies and my very toddler like maturity that is growing very slowly as I keep the food down. But this program has really given me tools, like tools to be able to like know what to do with my anger, know what to do with my fear, know what to do with my discomfort and my dissatisfaction. And I didn't know what to do with it. I ate over it before. Like I didn't know what to do with it, or I hid. Like I would either eat or I would hide, and I would blame everyone and everything because I just didn't have the skills. And that's what this program has given me. So I just want to talk about steps 8 and 9 really quick. When I made my amends, step 8, we make a list of the people we had harmed. And step 9, we met amends. And I remember making amends to my sweet dad. And my dad is, honestly, he's like one of my best friends. And I made amends to him. And my sponsor had me explain that I was making my amends as part of this program. And, you know, what my dad said to me was, I think I've been a compulsive overeater my whole life. And I remember watching my dad, and he ran so many marathons. He eventually ruptured discs in his back from running so much. And I remember him eating peanut butter or bologna sandwiches before we would sit down and eat dinner. And then he would eat another like half a loaf of French bread and all of these things, like, you know, after dinner. And then he would wake up at 4 a.m. and exercise. And I love my dad, but I also learned a lot from him about how to manage stress and manage my body. And the beautiful thing was, when my dad said that to me, you know, if I hadn't gone through this process and if he would have admitted that to me, I probably would have been angry because he did this to me, or he didn't teach me a better way, or he didn't get help. But when he said that to me, I was filled with so much love and compassion for him. And I ended up sharing a podcast with him and never heard about it again. And it doesn't matter. Like the seed is planted and that's what we get to do. Like we just get to share, our freedom and our love for each other. And sometimes it's within the walls of our own family and sometimes it's not. But I have a true witness of the amends process, of it being exactly the way God wants us to show up in our relationships to repair the harm caused, so that, like it says in the AA 12 and 12, that we can look anyone in the eye, and that's a huge gift, like huge gift to be able to say, like, I can go anywhere, I can see anyone, and I can look anyone in the eye. And I can do that today. Like that is such a gift. And I had my whole family over for Thanksgiving and I could look all of them in the eye. Like, and I wasn't offering to take anyone's plate so that I could go eat it in the kitchen. And I wasn't watching what everyone was eating. Like I could hold my cousin's sweet baby so that she could eat dinner and not have to like eat with the baby on her lap. And I could put my food on a scale and have so much peace at Thanksgiving dinner, like, and actually be grateful for the people in my life. Okay. So, that brings us to step 10. And so I want you to come with me to, page 84. So, this says, this thought brings us to step 10, which suggests we continue to take personal inventory and continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. We're going to make mistakes, people. Like, it's going to happen. And if you're anything like me, like, I I really want to be perfect. Like I really do. And that is part of my disease, but it's not going to happen. So, but we have a tool. We get to set right any new mistakes as we go along. We vigorously commence this way of living as we cleaned up the past. We have entered the world of the spirit. Our next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. And so I get a little annoyed. I don't know. I guess I just disagree with people that say like the 10, 11, and 12 are like the maintenance steps. They're really like the transformation and growth steps. Like that is where, you know, steps 1 through 9, like clear away all of the wreckage. Like you have this fresh slate and, but you still have to build a new house. Like you have to build a new spiritual house. And that is what steps 10, 11, and 12 do. And so they are definitely growth, like spiritual growth steps. But it says this is not an overnight matter. It should continue for a lifetime. So we thought we were coming here to like put the food down. It's about some, yes, we do that, but it's about so much more than that. We continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. When these crop up, we ask God at once to remove them. We discuss them with someone immediately and make amends quickly if we have harmed anyone. Then we resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help. Love and tolerance of others is our code. And if you're not doing 10 steps regularly, like that is like a sure sign that you're headed for trouble. Like you have to do your 10 steps. And it only works when we invite our higher power into it. If you have that 10 step sheet, it starts with the third step prayer. You do the resentment prayer. You have the fear prayer. You have the seventh step prayer. Like we're consciously contacting our higher power. We are saying, I need your help. Please change me. Bless whoever we're resentful at and change me. And I see the time and I just want to end with this on the bottom of page 84. It says, we have ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol, even our alcoholic foods, ingredients, and behaviors. For by this time, sanity will have returned. We will seldom be interested in liquor, our alcoholic foods, ingredients, or behavior. If tempted, we recoil from it as from a hot flame. We react sanely and normally, and we find that this has happened automatically. We will see that our new attitude toward liquor has been given us without any thought or effort on our part. That's a little debatable. We kind of have to do a lot of work around here, but our offering compared to what our higher power gives us is minimal. It just comes. That is the miracle of it. We are not fighting it. Neither are we avoiding temptation. We feel as though we had been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. We have not even sworn off. Instead, the problem has been removed. It does not exist for us. We are neither cocky nor are we afraid. That is our experience. That is how we react so long as we keep in fit spiritual condition. And so I just want to end like we have a spiritual malady. If we are not doing things to treat the spiritual malady, the inventories, the praying, inviting God in, we relapse on our faith before we relapse on the food. So you have to take the actions, but they can't just be actions. Like it's not, the saying is like faith without works is dead. But like if we're doing works without faith, without like believing that God will do for us what we can't do for ourselves, we are headed for trouble. And so I just, for those of you that are recovered, like look at your spiritual work. Like, is there areas that you can improve? And those that are in the food, like it's not about the food at the beginning. You got to put the food down, but this is a spiritual malady. We have to treat the spiritual malady so that we can then straighten out physically and emotionally. And I am so grateful for this opportunity of service. And with that, I'll pass.
Thank you so much, Kelsey, for your powerful